whom Lewis and Belle Simon raised in the Kew Gardens Hill section of Queens, New York. He had answered to several other names in his 25 years, all in the pursuit of a professional music career that took off a few weeks into his senior year of high school, when the short, dark-eyed Simon, along with his tall, blue-eyed best friend, Arthur Artie Garfunkel, recorded Hey Schoolgirl, a sprightly pop tune of their own composition. The owner of a small New York record company heard cash register bells in the boys' chiming harmonies, and within days, he had their signatures on a recording contract. The boys waxed another song for the single's B-side, and then set to inventing a catchy stage name for their act. Anything to differentiate themselves from the hundreds, even thousands, of artists lobbing songs at the Billboard charts that week. There were other reasons, particularly their obviously ethnic names. So when record company owner Sid Prozen came up with Tom and Jerry, which played off the popular cartoon characters of the day, Artie and Paul added surnames, Graff and Landis, respectively, and crossed their fingers. Mirabile dictu, and by Thanksgiving, Hey Schoolgirl was hopscotching up the sales charts. By the end of Christmas Vacation, Paul and Artie's shiny-cheeked alter egos were famous. Teen songwriters hit, shouted the New York World Telegram and Sun. Whiz kids rock and roll, cried the Long Island Star Journal. The glory didn't last. Tom and Jerry recorded and released eight or so other songs in the next few months, but none of them followed the astral trajectory of Schoolgirl. With college on the horizon and a bitter disagreement already in progress, the duo retired from the Tom and Jerry business and stepped back onto the middle-class overachiever's path to college, graduate school, and the 704 from Scarsdale to Grand Central. That didn't last either. And when the pair reformed as folk singers in 1963, it took just over 2 years for them to become extremely, wildly imprinted upon a generation famous as Simon and Garfunkel. 1 year and a chain of folk rock hits later, the pop tunes by 1950s teen idols Tom and Jerry reappeared in a package decorated with the grown-up Simon and Garfunkel's poet rocker frowns. And this was a big problem. Tom and Jerry had been light-footed teen idols whose central, nay, sole concerns involved girls, school, the joys of the former, the hassles of the latter, and the travails of both. They were the boys every mother wanted her daughter to bring home. But a decade later, Simon and Garfunkel were stylish folk singers whose melancholic songs surveyed the internal geographies of post-adolescent malaise, social disconnection, and the euphoria that grabs you when the sun shines and you're rapping with lampposts and feeling groovy. So how could Prozen have compiled those ridiculous high school songs, slapped a recent photo on the cover, and called it Simon and Garfunkel's latest album? Outraged by the potential damage the bogus album could cause their reputations and fortunes, Paul and Artie had summoned their attorneys and gone on the attack. The argument boiled down to this. While the original contract the adolescent Paul and Artie and their parents had signed with Prozen in 1957 did grant the executive the right to use their master recordings in any fashion he chose, nothing in the deal gave him the right to advertise the work as the product of Paul Simon and Arthur Garfunkel. Back when they signed, Paul and Artie were unknown high schoolers who were thrilled to get any attention whatsoever. If Tom and Jerry was a more marketable handle than Artie and Paul, then so be it. Pop stars always changed their names. Yet when their debut record made a splash, virtually every feature written about the teen duo in newspapers ranging from the Forest Hills High School Beacon to the New York World Telegram and Sun to the Long Island Star Journal revealed some combination of the boys' real names, the names of their parents, and the exact name and location of their high school.